supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Hundreds showed up for a Stand Against Hate rally today on Independence Mall, hoping to unite residents and faith communities following recent vandalism at a Jewish cemetery in northeast Philadelphia. Details from WHYY's Bobby Allen.
Despite the whipping winds, the crowd joined in folk songs and waved signs that read, "Hate has no home here and choose love." Governor Tom Wolf said the vandals who toppled more than 100 headstones at the Mount Carmel Cemetery were cowards. He also condemned the nationwide bomb threats targeting Jewish centers, including locations in Philadelphia, New Jersey, and Delaware.
They will fail in their attempts to instill fear in all of us.
For Mayor Jim Kenney, the Mount Carmel incident felt personal. Growing up in South Philly, he said, was about two-thirds Irish Catholic and about one-third Jewish.
And we were all crazy.
As he walked through the cemetery to assess the damage, he was reminded of the Jewish doctors, dentists, and grocers who surrounded him growing up and became part of the fabric of the city he now leads.
That denigration and that attack was on them, and it was on my childhood, and it was on my neighborhood. And it's cowardly.
Opposite the stage, droves of people held signs, like Shelley Leppendorf. Her children attended Kaiserman JCC in Wynwood, which was evacuated recently following a bomb threat.
People seem to feel like they have more license to commit hate crimes today than they did a year ago. And I think that Trump has fueled that.
Although President Trump condemned anti-Semitic attacks in his speech to Congress, Leppendorf says the president should take a loud and clear stand every day, not just when he's on national television. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
By releasing his spending plan today, the mayor also officially started the budget season. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports the big question is, how will it change after months of public hearings in city council?
You all excited? I am too.
With that tongue-in-cheek statement, City Council President Darrell Clark started the budget process by accepting the mayor's proposed spending program. Mayor Kenney says nearly $2 million will be spent to combat the opioid and heroin epidemic.
While the city has already created 500 additional methadone treatment slots, we must do more. We are proposing to expand the distribution of naloxone to the 10,000 Philadelphians and their families at risk for overdose.
The mayor added the city will improve road safety, repave more streets, and add more men and women to the fire department.
Our paramedics are also faced with increasingly high service demands across Philadelphia, especially in Center City during normal work and commuting hours. To address these challenges, we ask Council to approve additional funds for staffing and training, as well as improvements to aging firehouses and outdated equipment.
Reaction from Council was positive. Councilman Curtis Jones says it's far better than a few years ago when budgets depended on property tax increases and job cuts.
We have moved down the road. We are in a lot better position. We don't have everything we want, but we have a lot more than what we had.
Councilwoman Maria Quinones Sanchez says the spending blueprint clearly shows Kenny's listening to his former colleagues on City Council.
I think that it is a responsible budget. I think that some of the staff additions are places that we've identified in council as priority areas.
The big unknown is the sweetened beverage tax Kenny signed last year that took effect in January. A court challenge is still pending. Workers from the soda industry picketed outside City Hall, and Kenny's budget would need significant changes if the tax is overturned. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Let's focus more narrowly on the health and welfare goals articulated in Mayor Kenny's budget proposal. Joining me, Eva Gladstein, Deputy Managing Director of Health and Human Services for the City of Philadelphia. Eva, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
My pleasure.
So why don't we take them up in order. First, health.
The city's health department is getting new resources in several areas. One is about $1.9 million to combat the opioid addiction crisis that's hitting our city as well as around the nation. Some of that's going to be used to increase our ability to administer overdose prevention. Some of it's going to be used to educate the public. Some of it's going to be used to actually work with the doctors who prescribe the most opioids to try to reduce overprescribing. And we're going to be able to create a real-time database so that we can track openings in treatment facilities, so when people are ready to come in for support, that they know where they can go.
Put that number in context, 1.9 million. Is that a drop in the bucket? Is it a substantial amount toward these endeavors?
It's really a substantial investment. I mean, the problem is huge. We had approximately 900 deaths from drug overdoses last year, three times the homicide rate. These are very important investments. It will help, hopefully, over time, reduce the problem as we try to get the overprescribing under control.
Let's move next to the aspect of the budget that pertains to protecting the city's most vulnerable populations.
Still with the health department, we're getting new resources, close to $1 million, to prevent and treat childhood lead poisoning. And we'll be able to remediate more homes, and we'll also be able to educate more parents and homeowners about the dangers. And that's obviously a critical issue. If we don't address that, then the children's opportunities in the future are really diminished. For the city's Department of Human Services, which is our child welfare agency, we're going to be increasing resources on two fronts. We have what we call resource parents or foster parents who take in children when their parents are not able to be their custodians or guardians. They have been for a number of years just receiving a little bit over $21 a day to support those children, which with our cost of living is not adequate. Over 5 years, we have a plan to raise that to very close to $36 a day per child. And then secondly, we're adding 10 more lawyers to the city's law department. And for every child to achieve a permanent outcome, either being reunified with their parent or some other custodian, there has to be a court process. And so our lawyers right now have caseloads that are just ridiculous of 250 or 260 children per lawyer. So by adding 10 lawyers, we're reducing their caseload. And that means that we can help the children move to permanency more quickly.
Eva, let's move on to new ways to evaluate and deal with homeless services.
We're really thrilled that in this budget, there's a little bit over $1 million of new investment. And what we've been trying to do is to increase opportunities that are not just shelter, because people who are living on the street or couch surfing, young people or families who are doubled up, need housing resources. They all want them, but not everybody wants to go to shelter. And shelter, frankly, is expensive for us as a city. So we're trying to create more housing options, and this is going to give us the ability to do that. We're going to be able to create 50 units of what we call rapid rehousing, but that will primarily serve families. And then 33 units of supportive housing, and that will primarily serve people who may have been on the street a while, who may have behavioral health issues or substance abuse issues. And once people are stably housed, they have just much more opportunity to receive other services and supports to deal with some of the underlying issues.
And again, in terms of scale, what impact do the additional 50 plus 33 units have?
Right. Unfortunately, we're looking at probably over time needing about 500 new housing units every year over 10 years. But what I'm thrilled to say is that we've been working very closely with the business community, and they've really stepped up, and we're actually creating a combined action plan called Shared Public Spaces. We anticipate seeing some private investment in this area as well.
Your service to the city is most extensive, having served in the three previous administrations and now the Kenney administration. Again, in terms of context, is the commitment as laid out currently on the same level, more or less than what you've seen in the past? And of course, I imagine a decade back in the throes of the recession, there was less income for these kinds of endeavors.
Absolutely. But I also think this administration is very clear. We're starting to grow in terms of population, but we also have to make sure there's equity and opportunity for everybody. And so there's a very strong, a real moral compass of this administration. I give the mayor credit for that, that we have to support the people who are most vulnerable in our city, and that benefits everybody.
Thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Eva Gladstein, Deputy Managing Director of Health and Human Services for the City of Philadelphia. As President Trump works to generate a plan to create jobs, he need not look any further than Paulsboro, New Jersey. The first major port to be built on the Delaware River in the last 50 years opened there today. And as WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, local officials say it will bring a wealth of jobs.
And just happy to welcome you to this day that some critics thought would never happen. For those who
with a giant steel ship as a backdrop, local officials braved the windy weather to mark the opening of the port of Paulsboro. Its first shipment pulled in today after 15 years of planning and preparation. Mayor Gary Stevenson took a page from President Trump's playbook to describe what it will mean to the blue-collar town across the Delaware River from Philadelphia's airport.
And I hope I don't offend anybody, but I believe this port will make Paulsboro great again. And because of this port and because of all of you, we are going to make that happen beginning today. Thank you.
And Paulsboro can use it. An asphalt refinery reportedly threatening to close in town would cost 100 workers their jobs. At the port, 100 people from South Jersey are working right now. But officials say that number could grow to 1,000 workers. State Senate President Steve Sweeney hopes the port will become an institution in Paulsboro.
And we now stand at the beginning of a place that will be generational. There will be families upon families that will work here.
The 200-acre port was built on an unused contaminated oil tank farm, and it's still mostly open space as port officials look for more customers. So far, they only have one customer, NLMK. It's a steel company based in Russia with a large presence in the United States. Robert Miller of NLMK Pennsylvania says the steel delivered to Paulsboro will be sent to plants across the country.
And our 1,100 American workers make American steel. And they're represented by American unions.
Port officials say they have a second possible customer, but they aren't ready to discuss any details just yet. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
The Trump administration's intent to clamp down on undocumented immigrants living in the United States could have broad economic implications for states. Results from a newly updated Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy report out today disputes the contention espoused by the president during his address to Congress that undocumented immigrants are a drain to taxpayers. Let's look at the numbers with Meg Wehe, Director of Programs at the Institute. Meg, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I suspect there's a popular notion that undocumented immigrants evade paying most taxes. To what extent is or is not that the case?
Well, it's definitely not the case. I think given the question, if the question is, and we hear whether or not undocumented immigrants are paying their fair share in taxes, the answer is definitely yes. In fact, they're paying a higher share of their income in state and local taxes than even the top 1% of taxpayers.
Is that because the top 1% enjoy tax dodges?
Exactly. And they enjoy many, many tax breaks that are not available to lower and middle income taxpayers.
So what are some of the categories of taxes that undocumented immigrants are subject to?
Sure. Well, I think the most important one to point out, because I'm sure there are questions of, you know, how is this the case undocumented immigrants are paying taxes, is that just like you and me and everyone else living and working in the United States, they're paying sales and excise taxes every single time they buy an article of clothing, purchase an item from a local store, every time they put gas in their car. If they own homes, roughly 30% of undocumented immigrants across the country are homeowners, they're paying property taxes.
The number often presented is that there are some 11 million undocumented workers in the United States, and based on that sample size, is it possible to make a pretty good guess of how many tax dollars are being generated?
Absolutely. Our study that we released today estimates that it's close to $12 billion in state and local taxes that the estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants pay each year.
Can you break that down by state and specifically our region, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware?
Sure. And Pennsylvania, our report estimates that the undocumented immigrants in the state pay roughly $135 million a year in state and local taxes. In New Jersey, that's closer to $600 million a year in state and local taxes. And in Delaware, it's just over $13 million in state and local taxes.
So let's focus more closely on New Jersey. That seems like a pretty large number.
I think that's largely because if you look at where undocumented immigrants live in our country, New Jersey has the fourth largest share of the population. Actually, Pennsylvania is number five. And, I mean, I think that the population size is largely what plays into the larger share of state and local taxes paid in that state.
Meg, has the Institute thought about a hypothetical whereby a substantial percentage of that 11 million cohort would be successfully deported? And what effect would that have on economies?
I think it's hard to quantify exactly how much would be lost, but I think it is very clear, and the report really clearly shows what's at stake with the policy of mass deportation. It would be billions of dollars in state and local revenue. And that's really just the minimum of what states could lose, since forcing out that many people would inevitably entail huge disruptions to state and local economies that would go far beyond even the loss of workers and tax dollars.
Meg Wehe, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Oh, and thank you very much for having me.
Meg Wehe is Director of Programs at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Philadelphia Mayor Kenney wants the city to reduce the amount of trash it sends to landfills and incinerators by 90% by 2035. Pretty ambitious for a city that now recycles 20% of what it puts at the curb. WHYY's Catalina Jaramillo followed a recycling truck to learn what it would take to get to this zero-waste goal.
It's an extremely windy Monday in South Philadelphia, and it's 8 a.m. on trash day.
Good morning.
Christian Smith and Robert Green pick up blue bins from the curbside and throw the recyclables into a municipal truck.
Every time when I run the truck, stand to the side a little bit because there might be some bottles and glass that break.
We normally look through the can and see if it's like objects that don't belong and we take it out.
Let's face it, most of us don't know how to recycle well. Smith says lots of people put cans and bottles out in plastic bags.
I normally shake them and like knock them against the ground to see if I hear any bottles or cans. And if they're really light and you can see through the bag, you can see that they got recycling in it.
See, we don't take plastic bags, but all of this is recycled.
Cans and bottles inside plastic bags likely will end up in the landfill because they look like trash. Plastic bags cannot be recycled at the curb because they damage the sorting equipment at the recycling facility. There's a long list of what does not belong in your blue bin or next to it.
No leaves, no black bags.
No toys, no furniture, no mattresses.
No heavy strict metals, no. Of course, no copper, nothing.
No styrofoam containers, no wax paper plates or cups, no electronics, and absolutely no needles or syringes.
Just recycle better. That's the biggest thing I would ask, is for them to recycle better. So that saves us less time digging through the cans and like picking out stuff.
So then the truck just like compacts everything in? Just
like... Yes.
Yes. Yep. Go ahead. A little bit.
So when it doesn't go all the way up like that, that's when we know it's time to go to the dump.
All of the city's recycling is processed in one private facility, the ReCommunity Recycling Center in South Philadelphia. Manager Robert Anderson takes us to a big yard where trucks dump their loads.
This is the truck that you are following?
There are piles of trash everywhere, but it doesn't smell that bad. Most of it is recyclable, except for what they call contaminants.
You know, this part of the load is a really rough part of the load, because there's a tremendous amount of food waste right here.
Food is a big contaminant. Plant manager Edwin Rodriguez say we would be surprised by all the other things they find here.
Money, jewelry, sometimes it'd be dead animals.
Drugs, and even dead bodies. Next to the building, there are large piles of 5-foot-tall cubes made from crushed materials.
Everything here is not recyclable.
So what about the pizza box?
Pizza box is recyclable provided there's no pizza left in the box or that it's not laced with grease.
It only takes a minute for the sorting machine to separate glass, paper fiber, plastic, and aluminum. Each material gets compacted together into those big cubes.
I call that bales of money.
That's how we look at it, bales of money. That's not trash to us.
Different companies buy the bales. Milk jugs and detergent bottles go to North Carolina. And most of our paper fiber goes to India and China.
And from the time that a resident puts the material into the recycling bin and it comes through my facility and ends up back on the supermarket, it could be as brief as 45 to 60 days.
The price you can get selling recycled materials has been down, but the city still saves money by recycling. Sending a ton of material to the landfill costs $65 and less than $15 to recycle it. Recycling is also better for the environment because there's less waste. But that only works if people recycle well.
If you are uncertain whether something is recyclable or not, you really should err in putting it in the trash, because if you're really environmentally conscious, the last thing you want to do is put more resources into a non-recycled material that's going to take an extra trip to the facility, take an extra trip through our process, only to end up as a disposable anyway.
The landfill is full of potential bales of money, things that could be recycled but end up in the trash. Those who work on it every day say it's not about recycling more, it's about recycling better. For WHYY's Plan Philly, I'm Catalina Jaramillo.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.